You're listening to iCat.
KQAC HD2 Portland 89.9.
KQOC HD2 Glenydon Beach 88.1.
KSLC HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
And KQHR HD2 The Dells and Hood River 88.1.
To Portland 89.9.
KQOC HD2 Glenydon Beach 88.1.
KSLC HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
And KQHR HD2 The Dells and Hood River 88.1.
The Complete Works of Winnie the Pooh. The immortal stories from the books Winnie the Pooh and The House at Pooh Corner, and poems from When We Were Very Young and Now We Are Six by Alan Alexander Milne. Presented for radio, unabridged, in 18 parts. Produced by Christopher Toyne and performed by Peter Dennis. Part 12. In which it is shown that tigers don't climb trees.
In which it is shown that tigers don't climb trees. One day when Pooh was thinking, he thought he would go and see Eeyore because he hadn't seen him since yesterday. And as he walked through the heather, singing to himself, he suddenly remembered that he hadn't seen Owl since the day before yesterday. So he thought he would just look in at the 100-acre wood on the way and see if Owl was at home. Well, he went on singing, until he came to the part of the stream where the stepping stones were. And when he was in the middle of the third stone, he began to wonder how Kanga and Roo and Tigger were getting on, because they all lived together in a different part of the forest. And he thought, I haven't seen Roo for a long time, and if I don't see him today, it will be a still longer time. So he sat down on the stone in the middle of the stream and sang another verse of his song while he wondered what to do. The other verse of the song was like this.
I could spend a happy morning seeing Roo. I could spend a happy morning being Pooh. For it doesn't seem to matter if I don't get any fatter. And I don't get any fatter what I do.
The sun was so delightfully warm, and the stone which had been sitting in it for a long time was so warm too, that Pooh had almost decided to go on being Pooh in the middle of the stream for the rest of the morning when he remembered Rabbit.
Rabbit, said Pooh to himself. I like talking to Rabbit. He talks about sensible things. He doesn't use long, difficult words like Owl. He uses short, easy words like, what about lunch, and help yourself, Pooh. I suppose, really, I ought to go and see Rabbit.
Which made him think of another verse.
Oh, I like his way of talking, yes, I do. It's the way of talking just for two. And help yourself with Rabbit, though it may become a habit, is a pleasant sort of habit for a Pooh.
So when he had sung this, he got up off his stone, walked back across the stream, and set off for Rabbit's house. But he hadn't got far before he began to say to himself,
Yes, but suppose Rabbit is out. Or suppose I get stuck in his front door again, coming out as I did once when his front door wasn't big enough. Because I know I'm not getting fatter, but his front door may be getting thinner. So wouldn't it be better if...
And all the time he was saying things like this, he was going more and more westerly without thinking. Until suddenly, he found himself at his own front door again. And it was 11 o'clock, which was time for a little something. Half an hour later, he was doing what he had always really meant to do. He was stumping off to Piglet's house. And as he walked, he wiped his mouth with the back of his paw and sang rather a fluffy song through the fur. It went like this.
I could spend a happy morning seeing Piglet, and I couldn't spend a happy morning not seeing Piglet. And it doesn't seem to matter if I don't see Owl and Eeyore or any of the others. And I'm not going to see Owl or Eeyore or any of the others. Or Christopher Robin.
Written down like this, it doesn't seem a very good song. But coming through Pale Fawn Fluff at about 11:30 on a very sunny morning, it seemed to Pooh to be one of the best songs he had ever sung. So he went on singing it. Piglet was busy digging a small hole in the ground outside his house.
"Hello, Piglet,"
said Pooh.
"Hello, Pooh,"
said Piglet, giving a jump of surprise.
"I knew it was you."
"So did I," said Pooh. "What are you doing?"
"I'm planting a acorn, Pooh, so that it can grow up into an oak tree and have lots of acorns just outside the front door, instead of having to walk miles and miles. Do you see, Pooh?"
"Supposing it doesn't," said Pooh.
"It will, because Christopher Robin says it will, so that's why I'm planting it."
"Well," said Pooh, "if I plant a honeycomb outside my house, then it will grow up into a beehive."
Piglet wasn't quite sure about this.
"Or a piece of a honeycomb," said Pooh, "so as not to waste too much. Only then I might only get a piece of a beehive, and it might be the wrong piece where the bees were buzzing and not honeying. Bother."
Piglet agreed that that would be rather bothering.
"Besides, Pooh, it's a very difficult thing, planting, unless you know how to do it,"
he said. And he put the acorn in the hole he had made and covered it up with earth and jumped on it.
"I do know," said Pooh, "because Christopher Robin gave me a nasturtium seed and I planted it, and I'm going to have nasturtiums all over the front door."
"I thought they were called nasturtiums,"
said Piglet timidly as he went on jumping.
"No," said Pooh, "not these. These are called nasturtiums."
When Piglet had finished jumping, he wiped his paws on his front and said,
"What shall we do now?"
And Pooh said, "Let's go and see Kangaroo and Tigger."
And Piglet said, yes, let's.
Because he was still a little anxious about Tigger, who was a very bouncy animal, with a way of saying, "How do you do?" which always left your ears full of sand, even after Kanga had said, "Gently, Tigger dear," and had helped you up again. So they set off for Kanga's house. Now it happened that Kanga had felt rather motherly that morning and wanting to count things like Roo's vests and how many pieces of soap there were left and the two clean spots in Tigger's feeder. So she had sent them out with a packet of watercress sandwiches for Roo and a packet of extract of malt sandwiches for Tigger to have a nice long morning in the forest, not getting into mischief. And off they had gone. And as they went, Tigger told Roo, who wanted to know, all about the things that Tiggers could do.
"Can they fly?"
asked Roo.
"Yeah," said Tigger. "They're very good flyers, Tiggers are. Extraordinary good flyers."
"Ooh,"
said Roo.
"Can they fly as well as Owl?"
"Yeah," said Tigger. "Only they don't want to."
"Why don't they want to?"
"Well, they just don't like it somehow."
Roo couldn't understand this because he thought it would be lovely to be able to fly. But Tigger said it was difficult to explain to anybody who wasn't a Tigger himself.
"Well," said Roo, "can they jump as far as Kangas?"
"Yeah," said Tigger, "when they want to."
"I love jumping,"
said Roo.
"Let's see who can jump farthest, you or me."
"I can," said Tigger, "but we mustn't stop now or we should be late."
"Late for what?"
"For whatever we want to be in time for,"
said Tigger, hurrying on. In a little while, they came to the 6 pine trees.
"I can swim,"
said Roo.
"I fell into the river and I swimmed. Can Tiggers swim?"
"Course they can. Ha! Tiggers can do everything."
"Can they climb trees better than Pooh?"
asked Roo, stopping under the tallest pine tree and looking up at it.
"Climbing trees is what they do best," said Tigger. "Much better than Pooh's."
"Could they climb this one?"
"They'd always climb in trees like that," said Tigger, "up and down all day."
"Oh, Tigger, are they really?"
"I'll show you," said Tigger bravely. "And you can sit on me back and watch me."
For of all the things which he had said Tiggers could do, the only one he felt really certain about suddenly was climbing trees.
"Oh, Tigger, oh, Tigger, oh, Tigger,"
squeaked Roo excitedly. So he sat on Tigger's back, and up they went. And for the first 10 feet, Tigger said happily to himself, "Up we go!" And for the next 10 feet, he said, "I always said tiggers could climb trees." And for the next 10 feet, he said, "Not that it's easy, mind you." And for the next 10 feet, he said, "Of course, there's the coming down, too. Backwards." And then he said, "Which will be difficult, unless one fell, when it would be easy." And at the word easy, the branch he was standing on broke suddenly, and he just managed to clutch at the one above him as he felt himself going, and then slowly he got his chin over it, and then one back paw, and then the other, until at last he was sitting on it, breathing very quickly, and wishing that he had gone in for swimming instead. Roo climbed off and sat down next to him.
"Oh, Tigger,"
he said excitedly.
"Are we at the top?"
"No,"
said Tigger.
"Are we going to the top?"
"No,"
said Tigger.
"Oh,"
said Roo rather sadly. And then he went on hopefully.
"That was a lovely bit just now when you pretended we were going to fall bump to the bottom and we didn't. Will you do that bit again?"
"No,"
said Tigger. Roo was silent for a little while. And then he said,
"Shall we eat our sandwiches, Tigger?"
And Tigger said,
"Yeah. Where are they?"
And Roo said,
"At the bottom of the tree."
And Tigger said,
"I don't think we'd better eat them just yet."
So they didn't. By and by, Pooh and Piglet came along. Pooh was telling Piglet in a singing voice that it didn't seem to matter if he didn't get any fatter, and he didn't think he was getting any fatter what he did. And Piglet was wondering how long it would be before his haycorn came up.
"Look, Pooh," said Piglet suddenly. "There's something in one of the pine trees."
"So there is," said Pooh, looking up wonderingly. "There's an animal."
Piglet took Pooh's arm, in case Pooh was frightened.
"Is it one of the fiercer animals?"
he said, looking the other way. Pooh nodded.
"It's a jaguar,"
he said.
"What do jaguars do?"
asked Piglet, hoping that they wouldn't.
"They hide in the branches of trees and drop on you as you go underneath," said Pooh. "Christopher Robin told me..."
"Perhaps we'd better have him go underneath, Pooh, in case he dropped and hurt himself."
"They don't hurt themselves," said Pooh. "They're such very good droppers."
Piglet still felt that to be underneath a very good dropper would be a mistake, and he was just going to hurry back for something which he had forgotten, when the jaguar called out to them. It called.
"That's what jaguars always do," said Pooh, much interested. "They call help, help. And then when you look up, they drop on you."
"I'm looking down!"
cried Piglet loudly, so as the jaguar shouldn't do the wrong thing by accident. Something very excited next to the jaguar heard him and squeaked,
"Pooh Piglet! Pooh Piglet!"
All of a sudden, Piglet felt that it was a much nicer day than he had thought it was. All warm and sunny.
"Pooh," he cried. "I believe it's Tigger and Roo."
"So it is," said Pooh. "I thought it was a jaguar and another jaguar."
"Hello, Roo,"
called Piglet.
"What are you doing?"
"We can't get down, we can't get down,"
cried Roo.
"Isn't it fun? Pooh, isn't it fun? Tigger and I are living in a tree like owl, and we're going to stay here forever and ever. I can see Piglet's house. Piglet, I can see your house from up here. Are we high? Is Owl's house as high up as this?"
"How did you get there, Roo?"
asked Piglet.
"On Tigger's back. And Tiggers can't climb downwards because the tails get in the way, only upwards. And Tigger forgot about that when we started, and he's only just remembered. So we've got to stay here forever and ever, unless we go higher. What did you say, Tigger?" "Oh, Tigger says if we go higher, we shan't be able to see Piglet's house so well, so we're going to stop here."
"Piglet,"
said Pooh solemnly when he had heard all this,
"what shall we do?"
And he began to eat Tigger's sandwiches.
"Are they, stuck?"
asked Piglet anxiously. Pooh nodded.
"Couldn't you climb up to them?"
"I might, Piglet, and I might bring Roo down on my back, but I couldn't bring Tigger down, so we must think of something else."
And in a thoughtful way, he began to eat roux sandwiches too. Whether he would have thought of anything before he had finished the last sandwich, I don't know. But he had just got to the last but one, when there was a crackling in the bracken, and Christopher Robin and Eeyore came strolling along together.
I shouldn't be surprised if it hailed a good deal tomorrow,
Eeyore was saying.
Blizzards and whatnot. Being fine today doesn't mean anything. It has no sig... What's that word? Well, it has none of that. It's just a small piece of weather.
There's Pooh, said Christopher Robin, who didn't much mind what it did tomorrow as long as he was out in it. Hello, Pooh.
It's Christopher Robin, said Piglet. He'll know what to do.
They hurried up to him.
Oh, Christopher Robin,
began Pooh.
And Eeyore,
said Eeyore.
Tigger and Roo are right up the six pine trees and they can't get down and...
And I was just saying, put in Piglet, that if only Christopher Robin...
And Eeyore?
If only you were here, then we could think of something to do.
Christopher Robin looked up at Tigger and Roo and tried to think of something.
I thought, said Piglet earnestly, that if Eeyore stood at the bottom of the tree and if Pooh stood on Eeyore's back... And if I stood on Pooh's shoulders...
And if Eeyore's back snapped suddenly, then we could all laugh. Ho, ho! Amusing in a quiet way, said Eeyore, but not really helpful.
Well, said Piglet meekly, I thought...
Would it break your back, Eeyore?
Asked Pooh, very much surprised.
That's what would be so interesting, Pooh. Not being quite sure till afterwards.
Pooh said,
Oh.
And they all began to think again. I've got an idea, cried Christopher Robin suddenly.
Listen to this, Piglet, said Eeyore, and then you'll know what we're trying to do.
I'll take off my tunic, and we'll each hold a corner, and then Roo and Tigger can jump into it, and it'll be all soft and bouncy for them, and they won't hurt themselves.
Getting Tigger down,
said Eeyore,
and not hurting anybody. Keep those two ideas in your head, Piglet, and you'll be all right.
But Piglet wasn't listening. He was so agog at the thought of seeing Christopher Robin's blue braces again. He had only seen them once before, when he was much younger, and being a little overexcited by them, had had to go to bed half an hour earlier than usual. And he had always wondered since if they were really as blue and as bracing as he had thought them. So when Christopher Robin took his tunic off, and they were, he felt quite friendly to Eeyore again, and held the corner of the tunic next to him, and smiled happily at him. And Eeyore whispered back,
I'm not saying there won't be an accident now, mind you. They're funny things, accidents. You never have them till you're having them.
When Roo understood what he had to do, he was wildly excited and cried out,
Tigger! Tigger! We're going to jump! Look at me jumping, Tigger! It's like flying, my jumping will be. Can Tiggers do it?
And he squeaked out,
I'm coming, Christopher Robin!
And he jumped straight into the middle of the tunic. And he was going so fast that he bounced up again almost as high as where he was before, and went on bouncing and saying,
Ooh, 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 ooh,
for quite a long time. And then at last he stopped and said,
Ooh, lovely.
And they put him on the ground.
Come on, Tigger,
he called out.
It's easy.
But Tigger was holding onto the branch and saying to himself, It's all very well for jumping animals like kangas, but it's quite different for swimming animals like chiggers. And he thought of himself floating on his back down a river, or striking out from one island to another, and he felt that that was really the life for a Tigger.
Come along,
called Christopher Robin.
You'll be all right.
Just wait a moment, said Tigger nervously. Small piece of bark in me eye.
And he moved slowly along his branch.
Come on, it's easy!
Squeaked Roo, and suddenly Tigger found how easy it was.
Ah!
he shouted as the tree flew past him. "Look out!" cried Christopher Robin to the others. There was a crash and a tearing noise and a confused heap of everybody on the ground. Christopher Robin and Pooh and Piglet picked themselves up first, and then they picked Tigger up, and underneath everybody else was Eeyore. "Oh, Eeyore," cried Christopher Robin, "are you hurt?" And he felt him rather anxiously and dusted him and helped him to stand up again. Eeyore said nothing for a long time, and then he said,
"Is Tigger there?"
Tigger was there, feeling bouncy again already. "Yes," said Christopher Robin, "Tigger's here."
"Well, just thank him for me,"
said Eeyore. Swing Song. "Here I go up in my swing ever so high. I am the king of the fields and the king of the town. I am the king of the earth and the king of the sky. Here I go up in my swing. Now I go down." Shoes and Stockings. "There's a cavern in the mountain where the old men meet. Hammer, 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 hammer. They make gold slippers for my lady's feet. Hammer, 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 hammer. My lady is marrying her own true knight. White her gown and her veil is white, but she must have slippers on her dainty feet. Hammer, 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 hammer. There's a cottage by the river where the old wives meet. Chatter, 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 chatter. They weave gold stockings for my lady's feet. Chatter, 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 chatter. My lady is going to her own true man, youth to youth since the world began, but she must have stockings on her dainty feet. Chatter, 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 chatter." Down by the pond. "I'm fishing."
"Don't talk, anybody. Don't come near. Can't you see that the fish might hear?
He thinks I'm playing with a piece of string. He thinks I'm another sort of funny sort of thing.
But he doesn't know I'm fishing. He doesn't know I'm fishing."
"That's what I'm doing, fishing. No, I'm not. I'm newting."
"Don't cough, anybody. Don't come by. Any small noise makes a newt feel shy."
"He thinks I'm a bush or a new sort of tree.
He thinks it's somebody but doesn't think it's me. And he doesn't know I'm newting. No, he doesn't know I'm newting.
That's what I'm doing. Newting."
"I see. I see,"
said Pooh, nodding his head.
"Talking about large somethings,"
he went on dreamily.
"I generally have a small something about now, about this time in the morning."
And he looked wistfully at the cupboard in the corner of Al's parlour.
"Just a mouthful of condensed milk or what not, with perhaps a lick of honey."
"Well then," said Al, "we write out this notice and we put it up all over the forest."
"A lick of honey,"
murmured Bear to himself.
Or not, as the case may be."
And he gave a deep sigh and tried very hard to listen to what Al was saying. But Al went on and on, using longer and longer words, until at last he came back to where he started, and he explained that the person to write out this notice was Christopher Robin.
"It was he who wrote the ones on my front door for me. Did you see them, Pooh?"
For some time now, Pooh had been saying yes and no in turn, with his eyes shut, to all that Al was saying. And having said yes, yes last time, he said no, not at all now, without really knowing what Al was talking about.
"Oh, didn't you see them?"
said Al, a little surprised.
"Come and look at them now."
So they went outside, and Pooh looked at the knocker and the notice below it,
and he looked at the bell rope and the notice below it. And the more he looked at the bell rope, the more he felt that he had seen something like it somewhere else, some time before.
A handsome bell rope, isn't it?
said Owl. Pooh nodded.
It reminds me of something, he said, but I can't think what. Where did you get it?
I just came across it in the forest, and it was hanging over a bush, and I thought at first somebody lived there, so I rang it, and nothing happened, and then I rang it again very loudly, and it came off in my hand, and as nobody seemed to want it, I took it home, and...
Owl, said Pooh solemnly, you made a mistake. Somebody did want it.
Who?
Eeyore. My dear friend Eeyore, he was... he was fond of it.
Fond of it?
Attached to it,
said Winnie the Pooh sadly. Knights and Ladies. There is in my old picture book a page at which I like to look, where knights and squires come riding down the cobbles of some steep old town, and ladies from beneath the eaves flutter their bravest handkerchiefs, or smiling proudly toss down gauges. But that was in the Middle Ages. It wouldn't happen now. But still, whenever I look up the hill where dark against the green and blue the firs come marching two by two, I wonder if perhaps I might see suddenly a shining knight winding his way from blue to green, exactly as it would have been those many, many years ago. Perhaps I might. You never know. Rice pudding. What is the matter with Mary Jane? She's crying with all her might and main, and she won't eat her dinner. Rice pudding again. What is the matter with Mary Jane? What is the matter with Mary Jane? I've promised her dolls and a daisy chain and a book about animals, all in vain. What is the matter with Mary Jane? What is the matter with Mary Jane? She's perfectly well and she hasn't a pain, but look at her now, she's beginning again. What is the matter with Mary Jane? What is the matter with Mary Jane? I've promised her sweets and a ride in the train, and I've begged her to stop for a bit and explain. What is the matter with Mary Jane? What is the matter with Mary Jane? She's perfectly well and she hasn't a pain, and it's lovely rice pudding for dinner again.
The Complete Works of Winnie the Pooh, performed by Peter Dennis, based on the stage show Bother. Music composed and conducted by Don Davis. Piano played by Gloria Chang and clarinet by Charles Boito. Production recorded and mixed by Jeff Sykes at KCRW Santa Monica. Executive producer Jacqueline Delorier. Radio production directed by Christopher Toyne. A co-production of KCRW and Bother LA Production.
You've just heard the complete works of Winnie the Pooh on ICANN HD2 and ICANNradio.org. Unabridged recordings of the four Winnie the Pooh books can be found at danpour.com or by calling 1-855-369-6768.
That was In Which It Is Shown That Tigger Don't Climb Trees. Join us every day for the complete works of Winnie the Pooh, at this time on ICANNradio.org. Tomorrow is In Which Rabbit Has a Busy Day, and we learn what Christopher Robin does in the mornings. You're listening to ICANN. Oregon Coast Aquarium is a journey from seafloor to shore, and we're offering a wave of new experiences. This summer, you can hone your climbing skills in their new nature play area. Then head over to their outdoor amphitheater to meet a cast of animal ambassadors. Or view their Headwaters feature to follow a raindrop's voyage from the mountains to the sea. You can plan your next adventure at aquarium.org.
There once was a composer who composed wonderful music, a composer whose music was loved and admired throughout Germany and England and Italy. Today, his music is still loved and performed all over the world. This composer's name is George Frederick Handel. But Handel's music was not always so well loved, and Handel himself was not always so grandly successful. In fact, Handel's life as a composer was rather difficult at times. His life was filled with challenges, for there were those individuals, jealous and mean-spirited, who were quite eager to see Handel fail. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself in our story. Let me begin our story in the middle. Well, it's not really the middle. Handel was already 21 years old. The year was 1706, and Handel went to live in Italy, traveling to Venice and Rome, where he could meet the greatest musicians of the time. There, he could also study the most current and popular fashions in music with celebrated composers. Now, even before arriving in Italy, Handel had established quite a reputation as a virtuoso player of the organ, as well as of the harpsichord. So, as it happened, in the year 1708, someone arranged a keyboard competition between Handel and the famous Italian composer Domenico Scarlatti to see who was the more talented performer. After hours and hours of playing, it was unanimously decided that, while Scarlatti was the better harpsichordist, Handel was the better organist. But you can be certain that they both performed brilliantly. Now, life, in some ways, was no different for Handel than it is for us today. He knew that networking, meeting very important and distinguished people, would be vital to his future success. And he was unquestionably right. For in Italy, he was able to make important German connections. In 1710, after 4 years in Italy, Handel returned to Germany and was appointed court composer to the Elector of Hanover. Little did he dream that one day this same Elector would become King George I, the future King of England. Now, all the noble courts throughout Europe had court composers, musicians who would compose original music to be performed on festive occasions and at entertainments of all kinds. And each of the courts had a court orchestra to perform such music. You could tell just how important a royal court was by the size of the orchestra in residence there. But what did Handel do when he accepted his new position in Hanover? Well, the first thing he did was to take English lessons. But the second thing he did was to ask the Elector's permission to leave the court. This leave of absence, Handel promised, would only last for just 1 year.
Ugh, go, if you wish,
said the Elector of Hanover.
But in 1 year, then you must be back at court.
Handel departed for London, which, in 1711, was about to become a musical centre for, of all things, Italian opera. Handel liked London. Indeed, he enjoyed living in England so much that he stayed away from Hanover for 3 years. And while he was away, he composed some truly important music. He had enormous success with his first Italian opera in London, the opera Rinaldo. It ran for more than 20 performances in its first season alone. When the curtain went up for the first performance in the year 1711, the overture began splendidly, sounding grand and lively like this. Rinaldo is a magical opera, full of fantasy and adventure. There is a wicked queen who has supernatural powers. She and her general abduct Rinaldo's girlfriend, Almirena. Rinaldo forms a great army. Then, the armies of good and evil battle each other. Using his own superhuman powers, Rinaldo overcomes all odds and rescues Almirena. In the end, a volcanic mountain opens up and swallows the wicked queen, her general, and their army. Now, Rinaldo was not only a theatrical success, it was also a great musical success. Songs from the opera were published and sold so that they could be sung and played at home. Here is one of those songs. It is an aria sung by Almirena, Rinaldo's sweetheart, just after she has been captured by the wicked queen. Poor Almirena, alone in her dungeon cell, terrified, wonders if she will ever be rescued. She sings, "Let me weep for my sad fate, for I am frightened and alone." This is one of Handel's simplest arias, but it is also one of the most beautiful that he ever composed.
Thank you.
was a showman. And so, as part of the stage production on that opening night, numerous small birds were released inside the theater as the power of good conquered the forces of evil in a beautiful glade in the woods. Well, it is said that those fluttering birds left the theater in a terrible mess. And so, after the opening performance, the management decided to eliminate that part of the entertainment. Now, Handel knew that a great opera is not exclusively comprised of beautiful lyrical music, and so he composed vibrant, dramatic music as well, such as this battle scene in the last act, where Handel creates great excitement by writing for four trumpets and timpani and whipping up the orchestra to a rousing military frenzy. Now, Handel, still in his 20s, continued to compose majestic music in England. His fame was spreading throughout all of Europe. His operas, written in Italian, since Italian opera had become popular in England, were considered the greatest musical creations of his time. Handel even traveled to Italy to invite famous Italian singers to perform in his operas in London. Thus, Handel was extremely busy, so busy, in fact, that he had completely forgotten all about the Elector of Hanover and his own promise to return to Germany after just 1 year. Well, as luck would have it, Queen Anne of England died. At that time, English law dictated that the new king or queen had to be Protestant. 26 relatives of Queen Anne were in line for the throne, but they were all Catholic. The 27th, however, was a Protestant, and he was none other than the Elector of Hanover. Handel's boss was coming to London to become King George I of England. And he was surely going to be furious with Handel because he, the court composer, had stayed away much too long, 3 years in fact. So Handel needed some spectacular event for which he could compose new music, some extra special music that would please the new king so greatly that His Majesty would forget and forgive Handel's long absence, and then Handel could again be in favor at the royal court. Now, it just so happened that the new King George announced his plans for a splendid celebration. This was to be a royal cruise with many boats sailing down the River Thames. Ah, thought Handel, just the event I need. And so, Handel spent several weeks composing composing furiously. Then he arranged for his own barge of musicians to travel alongside the king's boat, where he would then perform this new music. The summer evening of July 17th, 1717, was warm and balmy, with a full moon to light the way. There were many boats crowded with lords and ladies and their retinues. Every craft was decorated with flags and banners bearing the coat of arms of each noble personage. You can just imagine the splendor of this sight. And as they all set sail, forming an elegant flotilla, well, there came George Frederick Handel and his merry band of more than 50 musicians, drawing up towards the king's royal barge and playing as they sailed.
"What have we here?"
exclaimed the king, peering over the side of his vessel, more than a little surprised to find 50 musicians suddenly pulling alongside the royal barge.
"Herr Handel, I believe. I am not certain, for I have not seen you in some time. But that was indeed some splendid music. Play on."
Thank you.
is indeed most cheerful and splendid music,
declared the king, smiling from his royal perch high above Handel's own vessel.
Quite the best I have ever heard. Is there more?
Oh, yes, your majesty, replied Handel. Quite a lot more. And he and his floating orchestra launched into a new section with trumpets and timpani. You can just imagine how thrilling it must have been, this magnificent royal cruise, enhanced by Handel's superb and delightful music. In fact, by the time Handel performed his now famous hornpipe melody, King George was beaming from ear to ear, tapping his foot in time to the music. And so, in the end, Handel was happily reinstated at court. Handel's music was so well loved that he served the kings of England until his death in 1759 at the age of 74. He was honored with burial in Westminster Abbey, where his tomb may be visited today. Handel composed volumes and volumes of wonderful music, works for orchestra, concertos, operas, oratorios, chamber music, works for solo instruments, and, of course, his most famous work, Messiah.